Hello, everyone. How are you? It's good to see you. I just before I took the mic, I figured something out that I didn't understand. About half an hour ago, my boyfriend was here, and my dog loves my boyfriend, and all of a sudden, she snapped at him like she was going to bite his face, and we were both like, wow, I wonder where that came from, and I just had no idea. But just now, I saw her snap at the air in the same way, and she was trying to catch a fly. So I bet there was a fly between her and his face, and that's what she was doing, trying to catch a fly with her mouth. So, hello, happy Sunday evening, and it's good to be here with you all, as Lynn mentioned, with the 7 Steps to Awakening. Tonight, when we get started, we will be going with quote number 728. So what I am doing right now is pasting that link into the room. Oh, I guess I didn't come in as admin. Shoot. shoot, Lynn, I meant to come in as admin. Let me just see if I can do that as a text rather than as a link. What I'm doing is just, if it will let me, I'm going to take out the HTTPS at the beginning, so that all that you have to do, oh no, I'm doing it wrong. Might have been faster for me just to go out of the room. I don't know how many of you guys actually follow the links anyway, so. instant message you, Lynn? I can probably do that during the song. Let me try sending you the link through instant message during the song. How's that sound? That's a good idea. I thought I came in as admin, but I must not have. Just type a star before the link. All right. Star. Star should know about that, I would think. It seems like Star should know whether typing a star would work or not. Let's find out. Oh, yeah, that did work. So now, Lynn, all you have to do is take the star out and you have a link. You can repost it. Thank you, Star. Okay, yay! All right, so, that's funny. So, as I mentioned, we are here for the 7 Steps to Awakening. I like to play a song before we get started. I use the song as an opportunity just to, you know, kind of be still and get ready for the speaking. So the song that I have right now that just kind of came to mind is Yusuf Islam, which is Cat Stevens' Muslim name. And the name of the song is Maybe There's a World.
Of a place and time where nobody gets annoyed. But I must admit, I'm not there yet, but something's keeping me going. Maybe there's a world that I've still to find. Maybe there's a world that I've still to find. Dreamt of an open world, borderless and wide, where the people move from place to place and nobody's taking sides. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Open up a world and let me in, then there'll be I've been waiting for the moment to arrive. All at once the palace of peace will fill my eyes. I've been waiting for that moment to arrive. All at once, the songs of the world will be but cries.
Islam. So before I get started on tonight's quote, 728, I want to go back and look at last week's teaching a little bit. And I know some of you weren't here for last week's, but I post all of these teachings on my website, reginadonacres.com, and some people listen to them in order, even if they're not here with us in the sanctuary live when I do the teaching. In fact, it appears that many more people actually listen to the recording than actually come in here live. You can tell that by looking at the website statistics. So there was something that I said in last week's teaching that I've had additional time to contemplate this week, and I want to go back and correct it. And actually, I saw the error in my mind while I was teaching, but I wasn't yet clear on what the error was. So last week during the teaching, and by the way, the quote we were looking at last week was 727, the ego sense is unreal. Do not trust it. And during my teaching, I told two stories. They were just made up stories. They had no basis in reality. but the first story was about a homeless woman who came to live with me, and temporarily, I guess, you know, as kind of a boost to help her out. And in the story, she was not following house rules at all. And instead of saying anything to her, I held a grievance, which of course grew as I harbored it and nursed it more and more. And in the end, there was a huge blow up, where she, you know, I obviously asked her to leave, but as she left, there was a lot of anger and she knocked holes in my walls and all of this kind of stuff in the story. And I was talking about how, you know, we really shouldn't trust our minds. It was believing my mind in the made-up story and harboring these grievances that really resulted in the outcome. And that what we should do is question our thoughts instead of believing them. We should not trust our ego mind. And then I told a second story, which was supposed to be the better version of the first story. In the first story, I was not questioning my mind, harboring grievances, believing my thoughts. And in the second story, I was supposed to be questioning my mind. There was no grievance. I was not believing the ego. And the way I told the second story last week was something like this. The homeless woman moved in with me. She was not following the house rules, but I did not believe thoughts about her that were coming up in my mind. I did not harbor any grievances against her. There was peace. But what I did was a couple of things. One, when she had first moved in, I was like cooking dinner for her and stuff, but she, you know, never helped out with the dishes or anything like that. And so finally I just decided, well, you know what? I didn't cook dinner before. I won't cook dinner now. You can just prepare your own meal and I'll prepare my own meal. But then she didn't clean up after herself. And so I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to get paper plates and stuff. That way I don't have dirty dishes all over the kitchen. And it was at this point in the story where something didn't feel right. And in fact, what I said out loud at that point when something didn't feel right was I said, it's hard to make up stories. You know, it's hard to make up a story. And I just thought maybe that's all, is that I wasn't making up a good story. But during the week, I realized what it was. And you could say, of course, that it was my own subconscious or unconscious trying to point something out to me. That a tendency I have had probably to some degree all of my life. I don't go back and recall specific instances. I don't know if you guys know, I don't carry the past with me anymore, so I don't have lots of, you know, specific instances that I can rattle off. This is even why I have to make up stories much of the time. But one tendency that I have had all of my life is what I'm going to call making accommodations. And I believe that I've done that because I thought it was nice, or I thought it was kind. Especially since I've gotten to the point where I can easily let go of things, and I can, you know, I can easily let go of just about anything. And so if there's something between, you know, me and somebody else that appears to be conflictual, I can easily just say, okay, never mind, we'll just do it your way. And that can feel very, very genuine for me. I can easily let go of it. I don't harbor a grievance. I don't harbor resentment. But what I came to see this week is that's not always a good idea. That's not always a good idea. I'm reminded of Peace Pilgrim. You know, Peace Pilgrim talked about how if we solve other people's problems for them, we're taking away their opportunity for growth. I realize that when I am making an accommodation for someone, and I can feel it intuitively. Remember, I felt it intuitively even in the story. In the story, when I went to the paper plates, instead of insisting that the woman do dishes, and this was just a made-up story, and I made that accommodation, that's when it began to feel wrong for me, intuitively. And again, I just thought it was a bad story. But when we make accommodations for people like that, and we can feel that little nudge that I felt when I was telling the story, you could say it is because we're taking away somebody else's learning opportunity. A good example of this, I know many parents that I've known in my lifetime, some of which are relatives of mine. Parents who make accommodations for their children as their children are growing. Instead of insisting as their children get certain ages that they become responsible for certain things, when the child shows they do not want to be responsible, the parent goes ahead and takes care of it. I have one relative, as the child was old enough and started driving, would get tickets and the parent would pay the tickets and would have accidents, and the parent would bail the child out. And, you know, the child was all the way up to, you know, 50s and had never matured. Had never matured at all. Because the parent made accommodations for the child always. And the child did not learn any of his lessons that he was to learn. And in fact, this child was my stepbrother. He died earlier this year. And there was a very interesting thing about his death. First of all, you could say that he died from lack of maturity. You know, he was an alcoholic and, in no way knew how to take care of himself, even though he lived alone. The father, of course, gave money to that. I think the father even owned the house that he lived in. I mean, again, the accommodations were continuing. And his inability to take care of himself, over drinking, all that, this is what, of course, led to his death. But what's really interesting about when he died is that he called his father the night before he died. And he said something about not feeling well. And then the next morning, probably 20 minutes before he died, he called his father again and he expressed, "I'm having trouble breathing, I'm having trouble breathing." And his dad said, "I'll come right over." And when his dad got there, he found him dead on the floor. And his dad blames himself for not doing something the night before when the son said he didn't feel well. But what I see is that the son did not know enough, even though he was a little over 50 years old, to call 911 for himself. Because he'd always leaned on Dad. Dad had always been there to lean on. And he never matured. He died from lack of maturity. He died from not learning any of his lessons in this lifetime. And in fact, if you look at Kabbalah, there's even a story in Kabbalah about how a particular man dies because he missed all of his opportunities to learn his lessons, and there was no reason for him to continue in this life. He didn't learn any of the lessons that he came into this life to learn, and so death came and took him away. So one thing that I think it's helpful for us to be aware of, and this was something that came to me this week. You all have heard of tough love, right? Tough love is sometimes tough on the lover. It may feel tough to the one being loved too, but it's tough on the lover because that ego idea of being nice or being kind isn't about being nice or being kind at all. It's more about protecting myself from fear, you know, like if it's my child, maybe I'm protecting myself from fear that my child won't be successful at learning his lessons. And so I try and save him from them. If it's accommodations with a friend that I'm making, maybe it's fear that the friend will not see me as nice or will not see me as loving or will not see me as spiritual or will not see me as fair. When we make accommodations for someone, not only are we taking away the opportunity for their lessons, but we're holding on to an ego fear, an ego belief in our own mind. So this week, and there may be a couple people that could vouch for this, although I don't know that they will, this week, I have learned this lesson, and I have ceased making accommodations, ceased being concerned about whether my friends think I'm loving or gentle or fair or my children or anybody else. And so it's one way in which I can now be truer to my intuition by playing my role. In fact, that was the promise that I made to, you know, to God this week, that I will play my role exactly as I am guided to play that role, and then let everything be as it will be. So I wanted to share that correction from last week's story. I wanted to let you know what I had learned and what I had seen as an error in my story and, of course, in me. And I'm always happy to let go of another little layer of ego. You know, I heard when Chris was speaking right before me? I heard him talking about how he loves to teach because he can, you know, continue this letting go process, this refining process. Those weren't the words that he used, but that's, you know, that's really what he was pointing to. Same thing here. And so I'm very, very happy with this additional refinement this week, but I wanted to pass that on to you. Yeah, and Lynn is saying, Mom's saying, this is harder on me, the old adage, yeah. But it's all about, again, it's all about tuning into your intuition. It's like even in the made-up story, that's what's so funny, even in the made-up story, when I got to the paper plate part, the intuition said, you know, like, I didn't know right then you're making accommodations. You know, that became clear later. In fact, it became clear. Because immediately after my teaching, Michael Langford sent out an email telling people I had made an error in my teaching, and in explaining where the error was. Of course, further contemplation, brought additional clarity. I wasn't immediately like that. Oh, I see what Michael's saying. It wasn't immediate. I saw what Michael wrote. I thought, You know, it's more like, huh, that's interesting, you know. I did feel something during the story, and now he's saying that I made a mistake, that, you know, I should not have bought the paper plates, but I needed a few more days of contemplation before this clarity arose that I just shared with you. All right, so shall we look at, begin to look at tonight's quote. I just glanced at it. As you guys know, I don't look at these things ahead of time. And I just saw this is a paragraph. It's not a short one like last week. Last week, the ego sense is unreal. Do not trust it. Very, very short. This one is very long. So, you know, considering it's already 22 after the hour, we may be spending 2 weeks on this one. Now, I don't know how you listen. I know how I listen, so I'll share this as a recommendation. If it feels right for you, please adopt it. If it doesn't, then don't. But I listen better often with my eyes closed because there are no distractions, especially here in Pal Talk where people are typing on the board. It can be a temptation to quickly move away from what the ears are hearing to what the eyes are seeing and to read that, and then I've missed a little bit of what the ears were hearing, right? So I like to listen with my eyes closed. And since this quote is kind of a long paragraph, you might want to close your eyes unless you happen to have the seven steps in front of you and you can read along, quote 728. But if you don't have the seven steps in front of you, you might want to close your eyes so that you can hear the quote without distraction. This quote is from the Yoga Vasistha. It's step 3 of the 7 steps to awakening. And this is the quote. The ego sense looks upon space around it as itself and its possession. Thus, it identifies itself with the body, etc., which it desires to protect. The body, etc., exist and perish after some time. On account of this delusion, the ego sense grieves repeatedly, thinking that the self is dead and lost. When the pot, etc., are lost, the space remains unaffected. Even so, when the bodies are lost, the self remains unaffected. The self is pure consciousness, subtler than even space. It is never destroyed. It is unborn. It does not perish. So that is the quote. The ego sense looks upon space around it as itself and its possession. Thus it identifies itself with the body, which it desires to protect. The body exists and perishes after some time. On account of this delusion, the ego sense grieves repeatedly, thinking that the self is dead and lost. When the pot is lost, the space remains unaffected. Even so, when the bodies are lost, the self remains unaffected. The self is pure consciousness, subtler than even space. It is never destroyed. It is unborn. It does not perish. So why don't we go ahead and look at the journal 728A. This was written on April 22nd, 2013. The ego sense is I am this. The ego sense includes my interpretations are truth. The ego sense must be undone. Yeah, and we all know that people can have different definitions of words. And so, for example, when one person says ego, it may not mean what another person means when they say ego. You know, for some people, the ego is the selfish aspect of the personality. And when I say the selfish aspect of the personality, I'm defining the word selfish in the way people in the world typically would. So, for example, if I am concerned about me and my time and I have no concern about you and your time, that is a selfish aspect of my personality, and some people would call that the ego. However, if I am being very considerate of you and your time, some people would then say that there's no ego there because of the consideration. The way the ego is being defined within these quotes in the Seven Steps to Awakening is much broader than that. The ego is just the belief that I am a person, whether I am a selfish person or whether I am a considerate person. The identification with person is ego. And in fact, I had a very interesting week this week. You could call it a challenging week, although one thing I did observe this week is that, at least as far as this week went, a challenging week for me now is nothing like a challenging week for me would have been, you know, 5 or more years ago. One friend said something about he was concerned about me, and I said, it's true, you know, this is the most challenging week I've had, you know, in a very long time, but I'm much better at challenges now. And the reason for that is I do not believe the ego mind like I once did. During this challenging week, the ego mind was chattering, but I was just letting it chatter, and I was not running to and fro doing what the mind was saying to do, right? But I also noticed something about the chatter, because when the mind is chattering, you have an opportunity to watch it, assuming you're not believing it. You have an opportunity to watch it, and you have an opportunity to see what it chatters about. And it was the funniest thing, because as you all know, I have been through, or those of you who know me anyway, I have been through a lot of purification. Once upon a time, in a week like the one I just had, my mind would have been chattering all kinds of grievances and, you know, thoughts of anger, and, you know, it's hard for me to even remember, probably fears, lots of fears, maybe guilt. Guilt would have been there. Lots of these types of thoughts throughout the week. Instead, my mind was chattering, but it was perfectly nice. It was not only nice to the other people involved in the situation this week, it was nice to itself, or we would word that as nice to me. And, you know, you could say it just wanted everybody to get along. It just wanted everybody to get along. It was a very nice ego. That spinning, chattering mind is the ego, even when it's very, very nice. In fact, one thing that I observed, in spite of how nice the chatter was, not a single grievance, not a single mean judgment against another person this week. And I assure you, this was a challenging week. There were even things said that I perceive as untrue. And I assure you that this is a time when my older ego mind would have been ravishingly mad, full of hatred, you know, et cetera, wanting to kill, maybe not actually killing, but you know how those thoughts are, et cetera, et cetera. And there wasn't one iota of that this week. Not one. But the activity, the spinning of the mind, even absent of that negativity, was the same. It amazed me. It was spinning just as much with thoughts like, I wish everyone would just get along. I wish, you know, they would see they didn't have to do this. All of this just, you know, more nicer type of thoughts. But the spinning activity itself was the same. And my feeling was, and again, without self-judgment, because, you know, sometimes when you use words and other people still judge, they think, oh no, Regina, you were judging yourself. And there was no judgment in it. It was observation. But what I observed was that the ego itself, although it's a more purified ego, the ego itself remains just as strong as it has always been. Cleaner. But just as strong as it has always been. So let's look back at this journal entry. The ego's sense is, I am this. This is me. That is not. Right? This is me. That is not. This is me. She is not me. This is me. He is not me. That's the ego. The ego sense is, I am this. The ego sense includes, my interpretations are truth. And we've all known this. The ego includes, I am right. My interpretations are truth. The ego sense must be undone. Now, I think it's also great when the ego is purified. But if the ego can be undone without being purified, so be it. A purified ego is still the ego. And that spinning that was happening, in spite of its niceness in my mind, in spite of its well wishes in my mind, that spinning, I know, somehow still had a negative effect on the world. Even though there appeared to be no negativity in it. At least not compared to what there used to be. It still had to have been a negative energy, even though all of the thoughts were kind of nice and clean thoughts. How do I know that? Two ways. One, during the day, sometimes I would feel tired three ways. I would feel tired where I typically feel fully energized. So that feeling tired was a sign that there was a negative energy present. There were a couple of nights this week when I did not sleep well. Did not, you know, lay down and fall right to sleep like I typically do. And then would, you know, maybe wake up in the night and lay awake for a while with the spinning, just the spinning happening. And I typically sleep fairly well. And three, there was at one point this week when I could not make a decision. There was not clarity on what I should do. And I called someone else and talked to them in order, and then I received the clarity through the talking. But typically, you know, when you aren't blocked by negative energy, this is how I'll word it. When you're not blocked by negative energy, what to say, what to do comes naturally. So when you're confused about what you should do, there must be a negative energy there. There has to be. You could say, even wishing people would get along. I love them all. Can't they see how close we are? That's a judgment. It's not the same kind of judgment as I hate them, I want to kill them, I wish they would shut up, why don't they go away? You know, that's the kind of negativity that most people think of as negativity. But even the very, very nice, very, very sweet, I wish things were different than they are, is negativity. And that negativity is still a part of, I'll call it the world problem. The ego itself is negativity. The I am this sense itself is negativity. The I am this as something specific, right? As I am this and not that. I am this specific person. That is negativity. This is why when you read different spiritual teachers, hold on, I need a drink. This is why when you read different spiritual teachers, they will say that the ego is the cause of all suffering, or the ego is the cause of all evil, things like this. Notice the sentence does not say the unpurified ego is the cause of all suffering or all evil, or the very blatant negative ego is the cause of all suffering or the cause of all evil. Good night, Star. They say the ego is the cause of all suffering or the cause of all evil. That would include the nice, kind ego. It is the I am this and not that sense itself that is the cause of all suffering and the cause of all evil. It was a busy week for me. I didn't have much time to watch the news. I only would glance at articles in Yahoo as I was on my way to email or on my way to MailChimp or the website or something like that. And it's all a bit of a blur to me, but I remember several attacks this week. You know, there was an attack in a mall in Munich. Somewhere early this morning or yesterday morning, I saw 80 dead in a terrorist attack somewhere, and maybe it was Africa or somewhere, I don't know. I think this morning I saw more dead in Baghdad, suicide bomber. Afghanistan, Dove says. Yeah, like I said, I didn't pay much attention. There was a lot going on. And what I saw, even as all of the words in my ego mind were I'm being genuine and truthful here. I was not hating. My mind was nice toward everyone, but spinning with its nice thoughts. The spinning was the same. And I knew as I looked out at what was happening among my friends and what was happening in the world, I knew that my nice spinning was as much a part of it as anybody else's anger. In fact, I knew more clearly than I ever have before how connected we are. I knew how it was all feeding upon itself and creating more and more of the same. And again, my nice thoughts were no different. Some of you may have seen, I think a lot of people saw, what I wrote in Facebook this week. Let me go to Facebook and find that and read that, because that is a part of this story that I am sharing with you. Oh, what a pretty quilt. I saw a pretty quilt when I first came into Facebook.
Are you talking to yourself?
No, I am not talking to myself. See all these people here? This is Jasmine. This is Jasmine. Jasmine, you want to say hi? Go ahead, use your mouth. Okay, she's not going to say hi. All right, now then. Oh, there's a hi, Jasmine. Hi, Jasmine. All right, so let me read to you, all right?
Bye.
Bye, I love you.
I'm going to close this door, okay? I'm going to go around the treadmill.
Okay, yeah, thank you. In fact, close the other door.
I'm going out that
one. Yeah, okay, good. Dear benevolent love, I forgive every wrong thought I've ever had, every act of madness, every moment of hatred, every confusion, every failure to listen, every projection, every time I believed my perception was right, every time I tried to get others to see my way, every thought for how others saw me, every judgment against another person, every judgment against myself, every selfish ambition, every fear, every instant of intolerance, every failure to love, every surge of self-righteousness, every whisper of gossip, every lie, every involvement in something that was not my affair, every lack of compassion, every time I ever took sides, every time I tried to strengthen my side in order to win over another, every failure to be kind, every instant of living outside of my heart, every moment of seeing myself as separate, everything. Thank you for breaking me. I was a hard nut to crack. What a relief it is to be completely broken. No more me. Nothing to uphold. Total freedom. Beyond surrender, nothing left to surrender. These meaningless, broken pieces are yours. I hand them over in complete joy, with no concern for their future. My gift to you, benevolent love. Praise be to you. Amen. Some people called this a prayer. One person called it a declaration. I agree it was a declaration. What's interesting about the declaration is, remember I told you that my spinning ego mind was clean, right? So I did not see myself, if you refer to this body, I did not see myself doing these things this week. These were things that I observed in what you would call others. And yet, the clarity was for real, not just words, that it was all mine. There wasn't a me and a them. It was all mine. So in that, there was no ego sense. Now, I wish I could say the ego sense did not return. It did. But during this period of time, when this seeing was occurring, when this clarity was coming, when what you have just heard was written, there was no ego sense. It was temporarily transcended. Since returning from that time of being of temporary transcending of the ego, there's another shift in clarity. Another shift in being able to see the ego. Seeing the ego better than before. And we talked about this last Sunday at some point. I think it was last Sunday morning during the weekly gathering. We talked about you need to be able to see the ego in order to not choose it. But if you can't see it, you are unconsciously choosing it. So the advantage, although that transcendence of the ego sense was only temporary and it did not last, the advantage of that period of time is that since then, although the ego sense is still here, you know, manonasa has not occurred, the ego sense is still here, I see it more clearly than I did before, which means I have additional opportunity now not to choose it, where before I would have been choosing it and not knowing it. So I'm very grateful for that. The week was, as you could say, a tough week or a challenging week. In fact, I told Teddy that it was the most challenging week I had had since the relationship with Laurent. But those of you who know about the relationship with Laurent know about all of the healing that took place in that challenge. Well, healing took place this week, at least for me. I cannot speak for anyone else. Jamie doesn't like the doors closed. Even though she wants to be in here with me, she doesn't like the idea that the door is closed and that Jasmine's on the other side of a closed door. I told another friend in an email, I think it might have been this morning, I said something about... You've heard the book, it starts off, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Well, I just kind of changed that quote a little bit. I said sometimes the times are the best of times. Anything that reveals the ego for us so that we can fall for less of its tricks, bravo. Let me see if Jamie wants to go out. You want to go out and be with Jasmine? Go on. I'm going to close down. Okay. So again, looking at the journal entry, the ego sense is, I am this. So I am this would have said, I was nice this week and they were not nice. I, as the ego sense, could never have written what I just read to you. Now, at the same time, I mean, oh, there's so much clarity that came this week, and some of it I don't know how to put into words. Because even in the moment of there being no ego sense when that writing was happening, there was not a lack of awareness that this body is called Regina, and that body is called by another name, and that body is called by another name, and that body was called by another name, right? Just like there wouldn't have been a lack of awareness that this is a chair and that is a desk. It's just that it was all me. This body that is called Regina, and that body that is called by another name, and that body that is called by another name, they were all me. And everything that was being spoken and thought and done were my thoughts. And without guilt, I was responsible for them all, and I was able to forgive them all. Another clarity that came during this experience that I don't quite know how to put into words. I'm going to use an example of Lynn Johnson. Maybe you can help me with this because I don't remember his name. There's a person that you used to call your teacher. I believe he was a Buddhist from Colorado, and he was a drunk. I don't remember his name. And when Lynn first told me about him and how this person was her teacher, there we go. Okay, now I see his name and I still don't know it. I would never know how to say it, but she's putting it in the room for us. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche or something like that. When Lynn first told me about him, oh, she spoke of him today, good. I thought, how could you have a teacher that was a drunk? See, that's a judgment. How could you have a teacher that was a drunk? And I don't know this Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche person, you know, so I have no idea. And in fact, I never declare anyone. I said this a million times. I never declare anyone as enlightened because unless I am enlightened myself, I would not know. Right? I would not know. So I never declare anyone enlightened. So there's no way I know whether this person, for lack of better words, was enlightened or not. But what I saw this week, in my moment of no ego sense, was the difference between the enlightened mind and the person. The person, I would say, is more like the stained glass window. And the enlightened mind is the light that shines through it. And I saw during this time of no ego sense how one can see herself not as this person, but as the enlightened mind. And in that moment, my judgment against Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche and any other teacher I ever judged as that one could not have been enlightened because of XXX, that fell away. That's like saying the sun cannot be the sun because the stained glass window had the color red in it. You see, it doesn't make sense. But that's what we do from this perspective. We say, oh, there's the color red. It can't be an enlightened window. It has the color red in it. Enlightened windows only have blue and green. So the key point, I guess, in everything that's being said today related to number 728 is just to get absolute clarity on the fact that although negativity most definitely can come from the ego sense is not negativity. The ego sense is, I am this and not that. And the ego sense itself, even the nicest ego in the world, is negativity. The ego sense itself is a part of the negativity that appears in the world as all of these events that we see. Therefore, the ego must be undone. The greatest service we can perform is the undoing of the ego. And in order to participate in that undoing process, we need to be able to see the ego. We need to see the ego as well as we can where we are at now and practice discernment as well as we can where we are now and choose not to fall for the ego's tricks as well as we can now. And somehow that develops in what the Course would call miracles, or what I call shifts. Additional shifting and shifting and shifting of being able to see the ego within ourselves better and better and better, and therefore fall for its tricks less and less and less. This is the most important thing for us to do. So the ego sense is, I am this. The ego sense includes my interpretations are truth, or as we usually say it around here, I am right. The ego sense must be undone. The ego sense must be undone. Rinpoche. Dolores is helping me, I think, with the pronunciation of Lynn's teacher's name, or at least one of her teachers. I've heard her mention a few people are her teachers. All right, so that's it for me tonight. Next week we will continue with number 728. I'm real excited. The next hour is going to be our movie group. And we get to talk about the nines, which was a lot of fun to watch. So I'm going to release the mic, and I'll be hanging out for the movie group and for Carrie Triffitt, and then I will be back after Carrie for the daily contemplation. Bye-bye.
Regina, thank you so much for your self-honesty.